Good afternoon, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I'm delighted to be here chatting with you tonight. Our intention on Cosmic Connections is to have a group of individuals come together and talk about different topics, but tonight I decided to be here by myself talking to you because I have a topic where the information really does come from reading the Akashic Records, and it seems to me that for this topic tonight, it would be better if I discuss this by myself. I'm going to take you back in time to an incident, something that I saw in England. It was nighttime, beautiful, clear night. Stars were shining, and this was in Salisbury. Since there is not manufacturing done in the area, the sky is extremely clear. The stars are, it's just as if you can put your hand up and grab a bunch of them. The particular night that I was there was chilly. The wind was rather still, though. And I was with a group of three ladies, and we are at the end of the street looking down on the property where the Gothic Cathedral of Salisbury stands. Beautiful night. And we look up at the sky, and what we see is like a mist that is coming out of the center of Salisbury Cathedral. And as this mist comes up out of the cathedral, it goes straight up in the sky until it hits some air currents quite a distance above the cathedral, where the air currents then take this mist, and you can see the mist moving with the air current. It was an exciting sight. And of course, what we were looking at and what we could perceive was this was the energy that was coming out of the earth, coming up through the two wings. Most Gothic cathedrals, you'll notice, sort of have like two wings on it, almost in the shape of a cross. And this mist or energy was coming up out of the center of those two wings. And, of course, I realized right away when I was looking at it is that this was a vortex on a ley line, and it was one of those vortexes where the energy was coming out of the earth instead of going into the earth, because the planet breathes in this manner. Energy comes out of the cosmos, comes towards our planet, and will go into these different vortices, into the center of the earth, and then at other points, the energy will then leave. And many times, you'll be, at least in England and France, you will be near a Gothic cathedral or some other sacred site when this happens. And of course, I was fascinated by it, as indeed anybody would be fascinated to see this. And so, when I came across a very interesting website, a friend of mine told me to go check it out. This is www.earthkeeper.com. And the gentleman who did this website has a lot of information about all the different sacred sites where he had been and some information about the site. And since I had been to a lot of the sacred places that he had visited, I was most interested in going over this. And so perhaps in some future shows on this particular night at Cosmic Connections, we'll bring forth some other information. He has a whole list of Earth Energy Glossary, discusses ley lines as slow lines of earth electricity. He talks about the different vortices, how a vortice is circular swirling motion of energy. And he mentions the electrical vortices and the magnetic vortices, and I'd like to just just mention what he says here because I think it might give you a little insight as to the reading that we did with the cherubim. He classifies an electrical vortex as a classification that spirals energy from inside the earth, and the magnetic vortices as a classification of a vortex that pulls energy inward from above into the earth. And that is basically what we were looking at that night that we were in Salisbury. And then the next day we went to Bath in England, and there's, of course, a Gothic cathedral there. And we were directed to stand right in the middle of those two wings where the two wings cross over one another. And that, I believe, is one of these places where the cosmic energy comes from the cosmos, goes down into the earth at that particular point, because when you stand there, you can feel the ride. Would like to suggest that anybody that is listening to me that has had some experiences at vortexes or on ley lines, give us a call. Here in the States, it's 877-876-5227. And if you're in Canada, give us a buzz at 888-810-8322. I've done some shows in the past where we've talked about ley lines, and we've talked about some of the fire festivals and some of the information about the Templars, because they had a lot to do with the ley lines. Let's start at the very basic. There's a lot of deposits of Akashic records. And if you go to my site at akashic-reading.com or reach it through my site that lists all of my different websites at carolynevers.com, there is an article there that I received from the Akashic Records through the cherubim that discusses all of the places where these records are kept. And I have to tell you, I found it very interesting because when we think of Akasha, we just think of one kind of a record. But on that page, it talks about all the different kinds of records and where they're located. So if you're interested in Akashic Records, I think you'd be interested in that particular article. And so on this information at earthkeeper.com, when he talks about the ley lines, he said that they run along natural paths of conductive mineralogy, such as quartz, metals, etc. And so the question that I had is, as far as the earth records are concerned, give us a little bit more information on this. Expand upon it. And what I found was this. The cherubim tell us that this particular information is very close to their thoughts of love, because they are very much involved with the energy that flows along the ley lines. And they mention that many times they've told us that they work for vibration, that vibration is their job. And we've had some discussions on some of the other shows, The Message and The Messenger, and you can pick this up on the archives, where they explain how they take the energy from source, how they move this energy throughout the entire cosmos, and then take the energy back to source. And these bands of vibration have all of the information imprinted upon it, according to where these vibrational lines have journeyed. And so what they explain, there's a little interesting part about this that I found fascinating, because the cherubim are saying that they're talking about the ley lines now. They use all of these ley lines, vortices, and breath points where the energy of the cosmos comes from outer space, moves towards the interior of the planet, and finds an exhaust in these portals of energy that you call ley lines, and this is what we were seeing. But what they're saying is that these ley lines and the exhaust points are actually part of their work of how this energy is revolving not only through the cosmos and our planet, but I suspect all the planets. Didn't ask them that question. But part of what is happening is every experience that is entered in a planet releases itself upon these gains of vibration, and they are working with feeding this information through the planet and back to source. So give me a call with your comments, your experiences, or if you just want to refute something that they've said. 877-876-5227. Now, they tell us that, and I think we kind of know this, you probably know this, that prana comes from the sun, and it feeds the electrical nature of our soul. And this electrical component, as it comes from the sun, goes into the earth, that it has the same effect on the earth, enlivening the interior of the planet, just as prana enlivens our souls. And they tell us that this is a very long circuit, of course, as you can imagine, but even though this is a long circuit, it makes its play much faster than we might imagine. Getting back to this concept of prana, I don't know if you've worked with prana in the sun, how it works inside the body, but there's an interesting thing that I was taught to do, how you can actually feel the prana coming into the body and how you can manipulate it. And this takes a little bit of working, but you really do feel it. And if you stand in the sun, first of all, you put some friction between your two hands, rub your two hands together, get a little bit of friction on there. And then you stand in the sun and you hold your hands out. And as you bring your hands together, do it very slowly until you get to the point where you can start to feel the prana. You literally can feel it. It will feel like a ball in between your two hands. Now, in the beginning, you're going to have to come your two hands, you're going to have to bring them relatively close to one another until you start feeling the energy. But the more that you work with it, you can start feeling this energy as you're right almost from the very beginning as you start bringing your hands together. In other words, you're sensitizing your hands to the energy. And, of course, you use some intent with this. But what they are saying in this reading is that basically how prana is enlivening us is how this energy from source is working on the same thing with the planet through the different ley lines. So I worked with a little bit of prana work some time ago. If you haven't done it, it's kind of interesting. Try it out because I get letters, emails from people who want to start feeling things. In other words, feeling energy, working with energy, seeing into the dimensions, and that's a good place to start. So just a little bit of a thought to you on that. If that's interesting to you, you can start with working with the prana on your hands. And the next thing that they said is if this energy was not making its rounds between the cosmos and in through the planet and then back out again, that it couldn't support life as we understand it. And we'll get into why. So we were talking about the differences in the vortexes, about how they're swirling motion of energy. And an electrical vortex is a vortex that spirals energy from inside the Earth, and a magnetic vortex pulls that energy from inward, from above into the Earth. And an electromagnetic vortex exhibits both inward and outward energy sources. So my question going to the cherubim was, do you agree with these assumptions? Is this how it works? And they said yes, for the most part. Where we differ is that while the surface premise seems correct, what happens beneath the surface would be different. And so once this energy goes inside, there's a blending or harmonizing of all the energies as an electrical component and as a magnetic component, and they unite and they form an electromagnetic current and moves beneath all the layers of the planet until it reaches its core, where it hits the crystal center and is then energized. So that center, there is a reserve of energy. We've talked about this in the past, that what they're telling us is that in the very core of the Earth, the very center, that there is material that is in, that is crystalline, and it is in the shape of a Merkaba. And this is the center that they're talking about, that this energy is going into the core, and there is a reserve of this energy at the crystal core, at the Merkaba. And I found this extraordinary, the next thing that was said, that this reserve keeps the axis steady so that the rotation of the planet remains relatively steady. There are some wobbles, but for the most part, it remains steady considering the size of the planet. These are just some further information on some little points that I just thought was interesting. Now, another time on one of my shows, we talked about the Mary Michael lines, or the Michael Mary lines, however you wish to say it, and that these are located in England. And I guess that probably is the most famous of the lines, because we have some people who have doused those lines, and there's some interesting books about it. Hamish Miller has done with a gentleman by the name of Broadhurst, and they doused not only the Mary Michael lines but some other lines also, and have actually made some maps on, I believe it's on The Message. There is a picture of that map around one of the center points where Archangel Michael tells us that there is a rod actually placed in that point, and you can the map is still there if you want to take a look at it. I think it's interesting. It shows each of the two lines where they cross over one another. Well, what the cherubim in the records has said in bringing forth the records, that when Atlantis was in the throes of going beneath the waters, of course we know that a lot of the population knew of it ahead of time and moved away from the island before it actually was destroyed. And we have some records, different places where they went to, but what the cherubim are saying is that there was a group that did go to England in the very early history, and that they harnessed the energies along the Mary Michael line through mental concentration. And so I asked them if they were able to change some of the directions of the energy and move them towards special temples for their spiritual work. And what we're told in this reading is that, yes, that's a fair assessment, that this is exactly what they did, that they were able to harness some of the energy from the different lines to move them to other areas where they could have a concentration of these energies, where they were building temples. And there was a purpose for them doing this because they were trying to maintain their spiritual powers, that if you could work in an area where there was high energy, you were able to either build up some of the abilities or hold on to what you already had. So what they were working with was the ability to be able to bring more prana from the cosmos and concentrate it into the temples. That the amount of prana that one holds is directly connected to your psychic abilities. That the larger your energy field is around the physical body, the more spiritual abilities you can command. And so they didn't write any of this down in the records because they didn't want this information to fall into the hands of people who were what they would consider unenlightened. There's not a lot. I did have some information about the fire festivals that were done a little bit later along these lines. But before we get into that, if we have time, and I don't know if we will, I want to touch a little bit on what happened when the Templars came and built the Gothic Cathedral. Because we know basically that behind that building spree, or that building period of time, the people who stood in the background with this information really were the Templars. They brought this information from Jerusalem, from Solomon's Temple, and they were behind the religious orders that actually, and the guilds that actually built the cathedrals. And I was interested in whether they changed the flow of the ley lines or the telluric lines that was naturally present at that location. And what the cherubim said from the records is that, no, it wasn't necessary to change the lines, as where the cathedrals were built there, they were well-known power points. And I found this very fascinating. It is believed that the Templars brought those records from Solomon's Temple. And they did this because they were able to retrieve some of the information from reading the Akashic records, but also they remembered some of the information, that they were involved with the energy in early lifetimes, and they, in their previous lifetimes, helped gather the information and deposit this where it was found later in the temple. So I find that fascinating. And I'm seeing this in some of the stories that I'm uncovering with reincarnation, that many times souls will start a project, and over lifetimes, they will work with that project and then eventually unearth it again. And this is what we are being told about this cache of information that was an artifact that was found in Solomon's Temple, that the people who retrieved it were part of the group who originally buried it and gathered it together. So I kind of thought that was interesting. And one of the reasons that this happens is because spirit brings forth this information, and when it falls into the wrong hands, or there is a group who wants to use that information to control other people, then they make sure that it's buried again. And so we have times when this incredibly beautiful information is brought forward, and then it is lost to us. It's buried. to be brought forth again. And we're being told that this is what's happening now, that this information, that we are going to be finding a lot of information of a spiritual nature coming forth, and how much we receive is going to depend on the stewardship that we use with what is placed in our hands. So let's hope we're able to receive a lot of it, because this is the time for it to be coming forth now. If you have a story or a comment, something you want to share with us, 877-876-5227. Or if there's a question that you have pertaining to this particular information, and you want us to check with the cherubim to get a more succinct answer, let us know. What we're going into now is what the Templars actually, some of the things that they incorporated into the Gothic cathedrals, and why they put this information in the cathedrals. And what we're told is that they had to use something that would be considered legitimate by the powers that be at the time. A cathedral would be accepted as part of the faith, and they could be built, but yet put information in there that was not obvious to the person looking at it. And so this was a good place to begin. Take something that would be considered legitimate, a church, and in that church code it, put codes in it, or even put some things in it that were not necessarily coded but would be available to the people as they entered the church, as they looked at the different things in the church. They would be subjected to different powers because it was sitting on a vortex, a very powerful place, and because of the time of the year that some of these pilgrimages were made and where they were made would also be part of the plan as to how the physical could be cleared, how the physical could be impressed with these energies, and how that in turn would help advance the person spiritually. And the other thing is, there were layers of groups who had access to certain information. There was what would be considered the very inner circle, which probably was a very small circle. And even among the Templars, all of the Templars didn't have all of this information available to them. So there were even small pockets inside the Templar organization that understood what was being put into the buildings. Now, one of the things that if you do any kind of a search for this or try to understand how this glass was manufactured, something that you might come up with is that what they actually did during that period of time is they took gemstones like sapphires and rubies and literally ground them up in a powder and put them inside the glass when they were making that glass. And there was a reason for that, because when the sunlight comes through the windows, the crystals and the gemstones energizes the sun before it reaches the individual, and as it reaches the individual, it is literally working on the subtle bodies around the physical. I had a very interesting experience when I went on that trip to Salisbury in England. I was with three other ladies, and we went to a lot of the sacred places. We had a distinct itinerary during the Harmonic Concordance, and we were there for a specific reason, but we happened to be in a small Gothic cathedral in a small town in England, and these windows were not real high like most of them were. These windows were very low, so that when you were in the church and the sun was shining through the windows, the window came up to about your, they were about waist high, which meant that when the sunlight came in through the glass, it literally flowed around your entire body. And we must have been there just at the right time of day, because what I could see when someone stood in that sunlight, it lit up their aura. You could see the aura in the sunlight, and that aura around the individual would change colors depending upon what window they were standing in front of. It just so happened that we were standing in front of a window that was mostly blue. Most of the glass in this window was blue. And as I looked up, every one of us could see that no matter who stood in front of this blue window, you could see their aura, and you could see it was entirely blue. This church had mostly blue windows, but I'm sure that whether it was red or green or blue, if you look at most of the colors in Gothic cathedrals, that is the majority of the colors, the reds, the blues. I mean, there are some yellows, but not too much. And so each one of these colors, as the sun is coming through there, it is activating the physical energy body. And I was aware of this before I actually took this reading. And so what the cherubim say about that is these particles were energized in the sun and in turn energized the physical body through the chakras and the different energy bodies which surround the physical. And, of course, I saw that. Very fast. Yes, we have a caller.
Oh, yes, Carolyn. Yes. Many times you talk about holding energy and holding space. Could you go into a little more detail of that and kind of explain to us what you're talking about?
Who am I speaking to? Just your first name.
Betty.
Hi, Betty. Now,
how you doing?
I'm doing great. Just love hearing from you. Now,
you're talking about an interesting subject close to me.
And why is this close to you?
Well, because I was involved in the building of Solomon's Temple.
I love it. Are you starting to remember that, Betty?
Well, I've been doing a lot of research, and
yeah.
I ran across something recently. Are you familiar with Dan Winter?
No, I'm not. Tell me about
him. Oh, man, you got to go. he's got some fascinating information. How the Golden Mean was incorporated into the temple. And
read that.
Pardon?
I said I'll have to read that one.
Oh, definitely.
What's the title of the book?
Well, he's got lots of video and books and DVDs on the internet.
Oh, so it's more than one.
Oh, yeah, he's got, fantastic information. I'll email you some of it so you can find it.
Oh, would love to. So, see, we got you started on some research. I just love it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Are you starting to remember this, or you want to remember it?
No, but, I mean, the research I've done, it just makes so much sense. It just resonates with me. But I'm still a little bit confused about what you mean by holding energy. And when you do the Akashic readings, you say you hold a space. I kind of have an idea, but I'm not real sure.
Well, that can mean different. That can have different meanings depending on what you're referring to. But now, when you talk about the Akashic readings, or you talk about healing on this dimension. I would say they are both the same in this sense. For information, whether it is knowledge, whether it is healing, if it is coming to this dimension from another dimension, one needs to be there from, one has to, in other words, if I live on this planet and I am a human being on this planet and I'm trying to get information from another dimension, from a higher source, I am holding the space in the sense that I am here, I am living, I am breathing, I am in this dimension, and I can be a receptacle to receive this.
Yeah, okay.
Caroline, on our Saturday shows, when she is with me and we talk about how she heals, she will tell you that God is doing the healing, and she is, she doesn't exactly use the word holding the space. What she says is she is the observer. In other words, she is on this plane. She is watching what is happening in the physical body, and she is observing this so that that healing can happen in this dimension.
She did say that she was the witness. Is that similar to what you're doing?
Well, this is what I'm saying. I'm holding a space in this dimension. I am taking a person's question. In other words, when a person has a question, their personality and their thought and their desire is in the vibration of their question. So how that works is that thought, their thought, their feelings, their desires is a vibration.
Okay.
I am holding, by reading that question and understanding it, I am holding that vibration, and I'm holding that vibration in this space.
Okay.
A part of my mind then goes to the center of the cosmos. I have that question in my mind, and I take it there.
Okay.
The cherubim, oh, I tell you, they are so beautiful. They are there waiting for me. And so I have that person's vibration, and they tell me that everyone's vibration is distinct like a fingerprint. And so if you have asked me a question, and I then take the vibration of that question and I take it to them, they can match that with your record. So they have in effect, I'm holding the space here with your vibration, with your question. Then that part of my mind goes to them. They take that vibration. They match it up with your record. And so they show this to me mostly as books. Sometimes they show it to me as a scroll, because a soul will have their records in a scroll instead of in a book because of when they came into being. There is a relatively small group whose records are on scrolls, but most of them are on books. And so they take the book, and people's records are extremely large because it holds everything that they have ever experienced from the time source brought them into, called them from nothingness, is how they express that. And everything that they have experienced is in that record. Now, the question that the person has is going to determine what section of that record that the cherubim are going to open.
Amazing.
Yes, it truly is amazing, because let's say you have one question today and you come forth with another question, Betty. They're going to go to a different part of the record.
And well, that brings up another question when you're
talking
about
it. Of course it does, because that's how it is. You get a piece of information, and then you got another question. I love it.
Well, I'm just about as curious as you are. But, you know, you've mentioned about the colors many times, and sometimes I wish that you, if you have that information, if you would explain the what the colors mean, the different colors that we carry or were formed from.
We've done that for many people, Betty, and it depends on how much a person gets, really depends on their question. Now, before I started working with the cherubim, my son, who is in spirit, who works with me, took me to the records one time, and this was extraordinarily beautiful. This information is in an e-book that I have on a website called Your Child Lives.
Uh-huh.
And he opened up the records, and he is reading it, but as he is reading it, I am seeing what he is saying. And oh, it was. It was extraordinary. And
yeah.
What he was reading for me is how the souls were created.
Mm-hmm.
And the
well, that's
colors,
the one book I haven't read.
What?
Or at least one of the ones.
I didn't hear what you said.
Quite a few of them.
I didn't hear what you said, Betty.
I have read several of your books, but that particular one I have not read yet. So does he go into the colors on that one?
No, he doesn't go into what each color represents, but what I saw was how the colors were working.
Oh.
And the best kind of description that I can give to you is on a stage, when people are on a stage and they use these lights, there is like a revolving, now I don't know if this is an old piece of equipment or if they're still using this, but at one time I know they had this revolving wheel that had colored discs in it, and there was a white light that came out, and then this colored wheel revolved in front
of
it.
Yeah, like on the old Christmas trees.
Yeah, they might have
remember
had the
silver
it then, too. But see, this is how it looked. I didn't see source, but what I did see was this incredibly brilliant, dazzling white light coming from source. It looked like the 4th of July, the way you think of fireworks. I mean, it was this extraordinary amount of white light. Couldn't see beyond where it was coming from, just the white light.
Uh-huh.
And then there were several components for the creation of the soul. One, there was this what I would call the music of the spheres. It was so, and this music was so incredibly beautiful. And this feeling of love, the love that Source had when souls were created, was just overwhelming. It was the love, if you can think of the greatest form of bliss, what that might feel like, the love that came forth from Source when souls were created was even greater than that. I mean, it's beyond our comprehension. Then the
yes.
colors started,
uh-huh.
and they came in waves, and the colors came. Source had an intent to bring forth souls to fill certain jobs, and there were a certain number of souls called upon each one of these colors. It was so well planned. In other words, they needed X number of souls to fulfill a certain commitment, to do a certain job, and that was implanted. That was an instinct that was planted in the heart to follow. And so if you find that you were a healer of some sort, that instinct was planted in your heart to be a healer. And the green light was called forth with a specific melody. And as the green would then go into another color, because that particular soul might have a foundation of green, but they might have another color that was imbued in it, because each color had a specific job, and so if a person had a very distinct kind of a job to do that maybe was so specialized, they would be born on, say, a green, and maybe a magenta would be involved in that, or a peach, or a subcolor. And I've seen in the records where some souls were created with three different colors because their job was so precise that it needed the abilities of more than one color. And so these instincts to fulfill a particular job was planted in the heart and in the soul, well, at that time in the soul, with the desire to do that job, and it was based on source's intent and how many souls he felt was needed to get the job done.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily, each person is not necessarily one color then.
I've seen in the records where some are one color. The color that seems to be the most, the largest contingent of souls were those called forth on the pink ray. The pink ray being love,
uh-huh.
Of course. And
that makes sense.
That could involve such things. They will express that love in maybe nursing. If they had a tinge of blue in it, where there is that mental process along with basically the pink, they might
uh-huh.
express their love of books and be librarians.
Uh-huh.
And so that's how the different colors, the different aspects of the colors come in. So from what the cherubim have showed me, the scrolled ones came first. They divided the dimensions, and then there were ones created on ruby reds, rays, and they come down through the different colors, and each one of those colors has a specific job. And then after the dimensions were divided, or rather, mm-hmm. before we got even to the dimensions, it was what started out was the void. So the void had to be divided.
Mm-hmm.
And that was divided, and then that made the dimensions, and so they went through all this creative process, and then they got down to the most of the souls, the ones on the pink ray, the ones then, after all these things were divided, was going to take God's love forth and work with God's love.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that sounds very interesting. Well, I'm going to get off in case somebody else wants to call, because there's just a few minutes left.
Well, Betty, thank you for telling me about Dan Winters.
Oh, you're going to be excited, I guarantee it. Send me an email.
Let me know how you're coming along with that, what you're remembering, because that's one of the things that would be helpful for you, is to remember some of these things that you've done.
It certainly would, but, you know, I'm not there yet.
I have to say, though,
I'm doing my homework.
Yeah, well, see, that's it. Because the more you, the more that you study and you learn about these things, it hits a chord.
Yeah.
But you know, something. Have you worked with your hands in the sun?
You know, that's funny. I haven't been, but several days ago, the sun came out for the first time.
Yeah.
And I just took my cot out of the shed, my cap and cot, and just stretched out under the sun and closed my eyes and just soaked in the rays. And I saw this like film strip of all these temples just passing in front of my eyes. It was just like going from right to left. And I was kind of like transparent, but it was really strange.
Well, that's not as strange as it might sound. That's downloading you were being downloaded information.
Really?
Yeah, and what mm-hmm. you could do when you go to bed at night, plant the thought that you want to remember, you want to start unraveling that and remember it. But that is a download, dear.
Well, if they're picking up on my thoughts, they already know that.
Another good time, to look at the sun is when the sun is setting.
It was around noon or so. We had about 3 hours of sunlight.
Saying that in addition to that, Betty, another good time is looking at the setting sun.
Oh, yeah.
Right as it is setting, when you don't have that bright sun there, you have sort of a reflection. To look at those lines of energy above the reflection, and you might pick up some information then. And also at the beginning of the day, if you are up in the morning, to look at that at sunrise, and yes, at noon too. These are all good times.
Yeah, I usually do catch the sunrise. It was really gorgeous the other day. So it's kind of hard for me to keep away from that.
Keep in touch, Betty. Let me know how things go.
Okie dokie.
You
Thank
got
you.
Some exciting things in your past.
Yeah. All right, good night.
Good night, dear.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Anyway, we were talking about the Gothic cathedrals before Betty had called, and we were talking about some of the things that went on in the Gothic cathedral. One of them, the gems that were ground into a powder and put into the stained glass windows. Then we wanted to go to, there's so much in the Gothic cathedrals really to talk about. Want to mention the labyrinth. A lot of the Gothic cathedrals have a labyrinth in the floor, and you probably are aware that this really was a meditation tool. And I had the good fortune to walk the labyrinth in Chartres Cathedral. Oh, gee, you got it in time. Who's this calling?
This is Brett.
Oh, hi, Brett. Good hearing you. What can we do for you today?
I had a question to the cherubim, if you have the time, concerning, I had read about our light bodies, future light bodies being an aspect of them in the sun.
You read about the light bodies, and I didn't hear what you said after that.
That we have an aspect of our future light bodies stored in the sun?
Now, you mean literally the sun in the sky, or do you mean when you stand in the sun, a reflection in our shadow or something like that? I got to understand exactly what you mean.
No, actually in the sun, like the diamond light body.
Okay, now... I want to make sure I got this right. You're believing or hearing or thinking that our light body or an aspect of our light body is located in the sun?
Right.
Okay.
I don't know if that's part of the I Am presence or if that's something related to the Christ consciousness level of our body. Serapis Bey talks about it in some of his books.
Who's talking about it?
Serapis Bey has mentioned that he calls it the Great Deathless Solar Body.
The Great Solar Body?
Yeah, Great Deathless Solar Body.
Deathless, okay.
Uh-huh. And I didn't know if the cherubim had any information about that.
Well, let's see. I just want to make sure that I understand your question because I can't get an accurate answer unless I understand the question.
Sure.
And so the question is in light bodies, and it's interesting that you called about this, Brett, because this was one of my next topics that I was going to the cherubim with anyway.
Okay.
Because I think I had some questions about light bodies myself. So what I'm going to ask them is if there is an aspect of our light bodies held in the sun.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the actual physical sun of our solar system.
Yeah, let me see what I can find out on that.
Great, thank you very much.
Okay, just give me a minute, gotta connect.
Sure.
they're showing me, Brett, is a ray. And they're showing me a, well, if you look beyond the sun, this ray, let me see where it's coming from, if it's our, the center of our galaxy, galaxy center, is the transition point, and that is the energy that goes to that point is coming from Source. So Source is sending this energy to galactic center. And there is an integration there. The energy is much higher, and so it has to be stepped down, and it's stepped down to fit this universe in our galactic center. And then I see it coming from galactic center to our sun. And what they're showing me is that this is a blueprint. And it is the blueprint. It's a stepped up, improved, well, I don't want to use the word improved, but it's a stepped up blueprint that is coming through the sun. And that is another, they're using the word homogenization, mixing of what is on this plane, because again, that has to be stepped down even again. And the reason it has to be stepped down again then is because what it's being homogenized with is the thoughts of on this planet. And whether we will take advantage of that to the fullest extent will depend on consciousness. And from there, there are streams. I think we could, cut off.
I'm still here.
Oh, because I heard a beeping.
I was just putting it on louder.
Oh, okay. Because I don't think we're going to be able to get to the end of this, Brett. Where we are right now is the breaking down of these beams as they come down to this planetary level.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, explaining that and how that works is going to take much longer than what I can do, because I've got to get off the air right now, because there's it seems to be a lot more information as to how this breaks down after it leaves through the sun. Do me a favor, Brett. Call me next week on Cosmic Connections, and what we'll do is get the rest of this information here, because I do think it's very important. You think you can do that?
Sure.
Talk to you then. Have to say goodbye to everyone now, because we're going to get beeped off. We're at the end of the show. You take care, Brett.
Thank you.
Good night. Good night, everyone.